Well, Christmas is pretty much upon us. I hope you've recovered from all the rushing around. If you haven't finished your Christmas shopping yet, you might just have time to get there, preferably after the service is finished. Christmas is so busy, isn't it? There's so much to do, so much running around. And so in the midst of all that, I wonder what it is that you're looking forward to this Christmas. For me, it's always been the big family gathering on Christmas Day for lunch, with all the aunts and uncles, the cousins, the grandparents, and a couple of extras thrown in there. So many things at that party became a tradition year after year, things that I always looked forward to. The cricket match after lunch, dessert and going back for the lighting of the pudding, grandpa falling asleep in his chair every year. I have so many great memories of those parties. Everyone loved them. They were the highlight of my year, really. Christmas parties can be fantastic, can't they? But they can also be horrible, full of family tension or reminding us of loss and separation. For some of us, Christmas simply highlights how alone we are. I still remember the first Christmas dinner after my parents-in-law got divorced, the way it turned something that was supposed to be a celebration into something that just reminded us of how broken our family is. Christmas parties, whether good or bad, can really shape how we feel about Christmas, can't it? So much so that, well, we barely give a thought to Jesus and to the significance that he has for us at Christmas. Now, you might have noticed, if you've been to enough Christmas services year after year, that it's not uncommon to hear in Christmas sermons that the picture of the baby in a manger, that picture that we're so familiar with, that we walk past and smile vacantly at in the shopping centre, that picture really doesn't do justice to the man that Jesus became, to his significance, what he went on to do in life, that he didn't stay a baby. And that's true. But in that last passage that we just heard from Matthew 2, we heard there that even as a baby, Jesus' significance was already such that he couldn't be ignored. Even as a baby, Jesus was so significant that he polarized people. Some worshipped him, while others wanted to kill him. We're going to spend a little bit of time now looking at that passage again to see what this Jesus, this baby, means for us at Christmas. The passage opens on a fairly familiar scene for us, doesn't it? I mean, you might even have one like it in your window at home. The Magi, the wise men, following the star to find the baby Jesus. Although we do find out later in this chapter that could have happened up to 2 years after Jesus was born. So if you do have a little nativity scene at home, maybe you should kind of move them around the corner because they're going to be a while. So these guys rock up to King Herod's palace and they ask for directions to the king of the Jews. Now, I don't know about you, but this seems like a pretty bold move because they're saying this to the guy who is calling himself the king of the Jews. I mean, what were they thinking? Did they not notice the big sign on the door of the palace that said King of the Jews? Did they not notice the crown on his head or the throne that he was sitting on? Well, these guys didn't really seem to notice that they were making a massive faux pas, nor did they seem to care, really. They were just looking for the anointed one, the Christ. They were looking for the king who God had promised centuries before, who would rule with justice and mercy, who would bring peace and healing. And Herod knew that's who they were looking for, because he calls in his religious experts and asks them in verse 14 where the Christ was to be born. Now, we don't know where these wise men got their info from, but we do know why they wanted to find this Christ child. It says so right there in verse 2. We have come to worship him. And that's exactly what they did. They plugged Bethlehem into their GPSs and headed off to find Jesus. And when they did, when they got there, they worshipped him. And they lavished him with expensive gifts, gold, frankincense, myrrh, gifts fit for a king. Because that's what he was, a king. the Magi recognised that, and they saw that there was only one right way to respond to this. It was to worship him. So that's one response to the infant king that we see in this passage. The other one that we see is, I guess you could say, a little bit less positive. As you might imagine, King Herod wasn't particularly excited to hear the news that the Magi brought him. Verse 3 says, when he heard the news, he was disturbed. Seems to me like that's probably a bit of an understatement. I mean, he's just been told that the potential challenger to his throne has been born. This is not really the kind of news that you want to hear before you've had your Weet-Bix in the morning. He's been told that the King of the Jews has been born, when that is the very title that he has given himself. He'd set himself up as king and given himself the title King of the Jews. But he wasn't from the royal line. In fact, he wasn't really even Jewish. He'd been established on his throne by the Roman emperor, and he kind of had a knack for keeping himself there. He was an efficient governor, he put down rebellions, he was a good administrator, and he would kill anyone who even looked sideways at his throne. And so these Magi, they waltz into Herod's throne room and ask directions for where they can find the real King of the Jews. And Herod was disturbed, it says. And it turns out this is not really the kind of guy who you want disturbed. I mean, he makes out like he wants to join the Magi in worshipping Jesus. But we don't have to read very far on past this passage to see what his true intentions were and the lengths that he was willing to go to protect his throne. Verse 16 of chapter 2, just past what we read, says this. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. That's Herod, the self-styled king, cunning and vicious, willing to do anything that he can to hold on to his throne. He's kind of the typical black hat bad guy, isn't he? I mean, if this was a character in an old black and white western, then every time he entered, you get that bad guy music being played. It's pretty easy to not like this guy, isn't it? So those are the two reactions that we get. On the one hand, we've got the Magi, the wise men who worshipped Jesus. And on the other, we've got Herod, who wanted him dead. Two pretty extreme reactions to this baby in a manger. And so, as I said, even as a baby, Jesus was so significant that people were completely polarized about him. You couldn't possibly get two more extreme reactions. Jealousy, resentment, fear. Herod was so threatened by the birth of Jesus that he had to have him killed, no matter what the collateral damage. But on the other hand, bowing down to worship. The Magi crossed nations to come and worship Jesus and to give him gifts fit for, well, for a king. Even while still a baby, Jesus polarized people because he was a king. And you can't be indifferent about a king. I guess we're not really used to the idea of proper kings, are we? I mean, sure, we come out in droves to see Queen Elizabeth when she visits us. But that's not really the same thing as a genuine ruling monarch, one who demands the right to our worship and obedience. A proper king is not someone you can just smile and wave at and then just happily get on with your day. They have an impact on us, whether we like it or not. And so, funnily enough, Herod, that black-hatted villain, he actually got Jesus right. Because he knew that the claim of Jesus' kingship was just too big to ignore. He knew it, and he hated it. Now, I presume that most of us here wouldn't put ourselves in the same category as Herod when it comes to our reaction to Jesus. Although, if you would, then I have to say your friend or relative who brought you here tonight has done a pretty good job to get you here. Well done. So we might not put ourselves in the same category as Herod, but maybe you wouldn't put yourself in the other category either. maybe you wouldn't put yourself in that category of the Magi who outright worshipped Jesus. You might not see yourself as fitting either of those two extremes. But can I say that if you would put yourself somewhere in the middle, if you would put yourself somewhere between those two extremes, then you've actually got the wrong Jesus. You've not just left him as a helpless baby in a manger. You've got the wrong baby entirely. Because even as a baby, Jesus was a king. A king sent by God. A king who actually claims the right to rule our lives. And if that was the claim of the baby, how much more so the man? How much more so the king who died and rose again to rule not just Israel, but all creation? How much more does that king claim the right to rule our lives? And that's why Jesus polarizes people. He polarizes people because he claims the right to rule our lives. That is, he claims the right to be able to tell me how I should live in the world, how I should treat other people, what's good and what's not good. He claims that right over me. And that's not always a popular idea, is it? You know, the throne of my life is comfortable. I like it. I've kind of worn a little groove in it and it fits me perfectly. And I'm not sure that I want someone else sitting on it. But, you know, it's not until we get to that thought there that we really begin to take the claims of Jesus seriously. Make no mistake, Jesus as king does bring big demands on our life. But the funny thing is, and what we don't often realise, I think, is that Jesus' rule is actually so much better than the job we do of ruling ourselves. We heard in the Isaiah 9 reading earlier that God's king is called the Prince of Peace. See, Jesus' rule involved giving up his life to bring us peace. That is, peace between us and God, and also peace among people. Jesus brings peace. Peace that heals the brokenness of our world and replaces it with joy. And so the brokenness of the most lonely Christmas party, that'll be a thing of the past when the peace of Jesus is fully revealed. And the goodness of the best Christmas party, well, that doesn't even come close to what Jesus' kingdom will be like in the end. And so can I urge you, if you're not someone who has put your trust in Jesus, who has handed the throne of your life back to the true King, can I urge you this Christmas to consider again the claims of Jesus? Does he really have the right to claim the throne of my life? And am I game to willingly hand that to him? If that is something that you would like to consider, then can I suggest three ways that you might move forward with that? Firstly, you could simply ask a friend or a relative who's a Christian, maybe the person you came with tonight. Secondly, you could join us for our regular Sundays from January onwards. Or thirdly, you could do a short course with us called Jesus an Introduction. It's a very simple introduction to who Jesus is and what he has done. I'll tell you a little bit more about that course a bit later. But can I urge you just to consider making that kind of decision tonight? Now, if you are someone who has already recognised the rightful rule of Jesus in our world and in your life, then this Christmas we actually have a great opportunity to show a little bit of what the character of Jesus' kingdom is like. At Christmas time, there are lots of people who are suffering from loneliness, isolation, family breakdown. That's just what life in this world is like. So if you know someone in that situation this Christmas, why not invite them to your Christmas lunch or dinner? If it's anything like my Christmas family lunches, There'll be plenty of food to go around. It's not too late. Christmas can be great if we are surrounded by loved ones, can't it? But if we are, then it's all too easy to draw a little bubble around our gathering and forget that out there, people are hurting. People in need. People who need someone to extend that hand of kindness to them. It does require giving up something for ourselves. It might actually change the character of what your Christmas party is like, having new people join it. But that's what having Jesus as King looks like. He's the King who gave up his life for us. And he calls us to do the same for him and for others. At Christmas, we do see so much of the potential for good in humanity, don't we? Generosity, genuine celebration, it's fantastic. But we also see so much of the brokenness too. But as we've seen tonight, Jesus will ultimately restore that brokenness, heal it. He sets people right with God and he heals the brokenness between people. And so the goodness of the very best Christmas party is just a pale reflection of what we have to look forward to. It's my prayer that this Christmas you will accept, perhaps for the first time, the goodness of Jesus, the true King, and that you will live out the character of his kingdom as we celebrate his birth.